I'll now turn it over to Rick to talk through the new international requirements that apply to transboundary movements of plastic scrap and waste under another international agreement that governs exports and imports of primarily hazardous waste for recovery.
Thank you, Leah. So there are two major international agreements that control the import and export of scrap and waste. Leah talked about the Basel Treaty. The other is an agreement called the OECD Council Decision. And OECD stands for the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, which is a consortium of democratic, mostly affluent countries, 36 countries around the world. The reason there's two agreements is that since these are wealthier countries, they wanted a more streamlined process or wanted to have the option of a more streamlined process for imports and exports. And so this agreement allows that. So that's the reason you've got two agreements. One of the advantages for us in the U.S. is that we're a member of the OECD. So Leah had talked about earlier where you're allowed to have agreements under the Basel Convention, which kind of, you know, parallel the Basel Convention. And the Basel Treaty is broken up into sections called articles, and it's Article 11. And you can have what's called an Article 11 agreement, which allows country to import and export, sort of separate from Basel, but kind of in parallel with Basel. And the OECD Council Decision is one of those agreements. And so that's a real advantage to us because in the Basel Convention, as Leah mentioned, there is a party non-party prohibition. So if you're a Basel party, sort of i.e. a member of the Basel Convention, you're not supposed to be trading with countries that are not a party to the convention. And since we're the U.S., is not a party to the convention, a lot of countries cannot trade with us normally under Basel, but because we have this, what's called a Basel Article 11 agreement, this OECD Council decision, we can trade with these 36 countries. Now it's just for recovery, but that covers a lot of material. So that it's been very helpful for us. So as you can see here, you know, we traded 581 metric tons of plastic scrap with OECD countries last year, valued at almost $300 million. So it's not inconsequential. And over half of our trade in plastic scrap is with other OECD countries. I know some of you are probably aware that, you know, we've got a fair amount going to South Asian and East Asian countries, some of which are OECD countries, but most of them are not. And that is significant, but we also have a significant trade with other OECD countries. So one of the things that, you know, because we have two major agreements controlling imports and exports, we ran into an issue in the late 90s. All of the OECD member countries had ratified the Basel Convention and become parties or members, like I said, by the late 90s, but the U.S. had not. And what that meant was is that all these other countries in the OECD had to follow the Basel import-export procedures as well as the OECD import-export procedures. And while those procedures were very similar, they weren't quite the same. And so folks, countries were having to go through the same set of procedure, two sets of procedures for a single for the same export. And so countries wanted to harmonize the Basel Convention agreement and the OECD Council Decision Agreement as much as possible. And we did that in the late 90s, early 2000s. We harmonized the procedure and we also harmonized the waste listings as much as possible. Leah was talking about Basel Annex 9, which is non-hazardous waste, you know, not covered by the convention. The OECD, that's the OECD Green List. Leah had talked about the Basel Annex 8, which is the Basel hazardous waste, hazardous scrap and waste. In the OECD, that's the OECD Amber List. And so those lists were harmonized as much as possible, Annex 9 with the Green List and Annex 8 with the Amber List. In the agreement, there was some concern that those waste lists, as they were changed over time, because you end up adding to them or modifying them, that the Basel and the OECD waste lists would drift apart over time. And countries wanted to prevent that from happening. So what we all agreed to was if folks want to have a change to the waste listings, let's do it through the Basel Convention because that's global. You know, covers the, you know, essentially almost the whole world. And so there's a change in the Basel Convention. Those changes are the Basel waste listings. Those waste listing changes are automatically incorporated into the OECD waste listing. So if somebody added a Basel Annex 8 waste in the Basel Convention area, that would be automatically incorporated in the OECD Amber List, unless a country objects. So we go to the next slide. And so for 20 years, there has been changes to the Basel waste listings, Annex 8 and Annex 9, and no one has ever objected. Everyone's fine with those waste listing changes. There was agreement that made sense. So as Leah had discussed last May in 2019, the Basel parties made a dramatic change. And we went from a situation where virtually no plastic was considered hazardous and Basel covered. And you know, essentially all non-hazardous plastic scrap was not covered in Basel. To change it to that most non-hazardous plastic scrap was now covered by Basel and prior notice and consent was required. And that was a really dramatic change. And part of the what was driving that was that the concern over marine litter. So if you're getting plastic scrap for recycling, you know, probably most of what you're getting is recyclable, but there's some of it, you know, including some plastics that aren't recyclable and they're, you know, what we sometimes refer to as residual waste. And so in some of the developing countries, some of the poorer countries, you know, that residual waste was either getting burned or dumped. And if it was getting dumped, then it can wash into waterways. It can wash into a stream and go from a stream to a creek to a river and an ocean, you know, 500 miles away and end up as marine litter in our oceans. And so the idea was that if countries in Basel, if countries had more control over what was coming into their country, they could lessen the imports and exports that resulted in those residual waste, which were a marine litter issue. In the US, we just didn't feel that made sense for the OECD because the OECD is wealthier countries. It's like the US, Canada, Europe, you know, Japan, South Korea, Australia, New Zealand, you know, some other countries, Mexico included. And you know, the vast majority of those countries are really good at dealing with residual waste. It's either landfilled or it goes for waste to energy or a facility that's got good emissions controls. So we didn't feel that it made sense to incorporate the Basel plastic scrap amendments into the OECD. It just wasn't a fit for the situation in the OECD countries. And we were concerned that it would unnecessarily lessen recycling. You know, in the OECD countries, we don't feel that there should be restrictions on the movement of non-hazardous plastic scrap. We want the plastic scrap to be able to move to where it's needed for, you know, when folks need materials and they're making new products, to increase the overall level of recycling. Once you start requiring prior notice of consent for non-hazardous plastic scrap, then you're adding costs, which lowers the value of the material. It makes it a little harder for that material to get to the end market, sort of, and you know, it takes it longer for it to get to the end market, which can be a problem sometimes. You know, manufacturers need materials at a certain time and they need predictability there. And so for a number of reasons, we did not want restrictions in the OECD on the movement of non-hazardous plastic scrap. We just didn't think it really made sense from an environmental or economic reasons. And because we objected last July, what that did was trigger a negotiation process in the OECD. So if we're not going to apply the Basel plastic scrap amendments, basically what are we going to apply? How are we going to control the imports and exports of plastic scrap, and sort of what plastic scrap are we going to control and what plastic scrap aren't we going to control? Next slide, please. So that negotiation process started last July and went until June of this year. And it was a very difficult negotiation process. The countries were pretty far apart. There were some countries that wanted to apply the Basel Scrap Amendments in the OECD. And then you had countries like the US where it's like, well, if a plastic is hazardous, then we should control it. We should apply notice and consent. But if it's not hazardous, we should let it move freely to increase the overall level of recycling. And there were countries all in between that, in between those two ends of the spectrum. And we never really got to a place where we could reach agreement. But one thing we could reach agreement on was that hazardous plastic scrap should be subject to notice and consent. And how hazardous plastic scrap is defined is if you contain a hazardous constituent in Appendix 1 of the OECD Council decision, and we have links later in this presentation. There's the URLs that have links that you can go see the Council decision, and you can go look at the OECD Council decision appendices. But if you've got a hazardous constituent listed in Appendix 1 and a plastic scrap that exhibits a hazardous characteristic listed in Appendix 2, then you're considered a hazardous plastic scrap under the OECD Council decision, and notice and consent would be required for imports and exports. For those of you who are familiar with the Resource Conservation Recovery Act, or better known as RCRA, you know, we've got some hazardous characteristics there, like toxicity, reactivity, corrosivity. So you've more or less got those in Basel and the OECD as well. But some of the other hazardous characteristics are like ecotox, you know, is another example. There's a broader, both the OECD and Basel have a broader range of characteristics than what we have in RCRA, you know, which I think is relevant in the case of plastics. Now, in terms of non-hazardous plastic scrap, we could not, that's really the area where the countries, the OECD countries could not reach agreement, did not get close to reaching agreement on what non-hazardous plastic scrap to control in terms of imports and exports and how to control it, which, you know, I was unfortunate, but it is what it is. I mean, plastic is a hot potato issue these days, and it's just hard to get all the countries on the same page. So what the situation we're left with is that individual OECD countries will be applying sort of the procedures and covering the scope of non-hazardous plastic scrap that they feel is appropriate, which I think makes it very challenging for importers and exporters. So it's going to be case by case. So, you know, if there's an import and export between the US and other OECD countries, you know, the importers and exporters are going to have to find out how that other, what requirements that other country is applying. Next slide, please. So the individual countries, as I said, are going to apply different approaches. And one of them is, and this is what the U.S. prefers, is what we call the status quo interpretation. You know, what we think we have been doing in the OECD for 20 years has been working. Generally, non-hazardous plastic scrap moves without prior notice and consent. Unfortunately, we didn't have any other OECD country, including some of our close allies, who agreed with that entirely. They wanted something, you know, somewhat different. They wanted some non-hazardous plastic scrap to be covered. And so I think we're going to see that. And one of the things we're going to see is that some of the OECD countries are going to say, okay, we are fine with, you know, all non-hazardous plastic scrap being imported and exported. But we're going to want prior notice and consent for either some or, you know, a good chunk of that non-hazardous plastic scrap imports and exports. And then that's, you know, one set of approaches. Another set of approaches, and countries have said they're going to take this interpretation, is what's called an out-of-scope interpretation. And so those countries in the OECD are basically saying the OECD countries couldn't reach agreement on how to handle plastic scrap imports and exports in the OECD. Hence, the OECD Council decision doesn't cover those imports and exports, and instead the Basel Convention Treaty does. And because the US is not a party to the Basel Convention Treaty, they are not going to import and export with the United States. We don't entirely know who those countries are. I mean, it's still being sorted out, sort of what interpretations we're hoping to hear, you know, by the end of the year, what interpretations OECD countries are going to take. We haven't really heard much so far, but we're, you know, it's really starting to push to find out what those interpretations are. The last item here, so one of the things the U.S. pushed for in the OECD negotiations was to get a review clause. Because, you know, we think, we're going to implement the approach where individual countries decide what requirements they're going to apply. They're going to apply different requirements. I think it's going to be very challenging. And so what we wanted was a built-in opportunity for the OECD countries to revisit this in the future. It's like, okay, for a few years, we've tried with individual countries having different approaches to imports and exports. Do we want to try and negotiate again to try and come up with a single OECD set of procedures for the imports and exports of plastic scrap? And hopefully, you know, and we agreed that 2024 would be the time that the OECD countries would consider that. And our hope is at that time that the countries will start another negotiation process and trying to come up with a single OECD approach to how to control non-hazardous plastic scrap. Next slide, please. So one of the things to keep in mind is while there's been, you know, there's significant changes going on in an international agreements on how they cover plastic scrap imports and exports, and there's significant changes in countries, you know, individual countries on how they control plastic scrap imports and exports. How we control them domestically under our waste management law, the Resource Conservation Recovery Act, has not changed. Those changes have not, they don't mean that RCRA changed. RCRA has not changed. We still have the same set of requirements on plastic scrap and waste that we've had. And talking a little bit about what some of those requirements are, if you have hazardous plastic scrap, which is possible, there is plastic where heavy metals are used as stabilizers. They could potentially fail the RCRA toxicity characteristic test. I mean, maybe they wouldn't, maybe they would. So it's possible under RCRA to have, you know, hazardous plastic scrap. And if you are, you know, if you are hazardous, then there's certain requirements. And one of them is the prior notice and consent process, which Lee and I have been talking about. Another is if you've got an export, it's going through a transit country, you've got to provide notice and get consent from that transit country. And a transit country is just any country that a shipment is going through. And you see this more in Europe. I think a good example is if you've got some waste in Spain that's going to be sent to a waste management facility in Germany, likely it's going to go through France on the way to Germany. So it's transiting France, and so Spain would have to provide notice and get consent from France before the shipment could go to Germany. You know, because of our geography, transit countries aren't as much of an issue for the U.S., but they're still an issue. We still have, you know, we have imports and exports that where transit countries are involved. So it is still something to keep in mind. So the tracking requirements. So basically, for those of you who are familiar with the RCRA Hazardous Waste Manifest. It's a tracking document that follows the waste from the point of generation to its final disposal point, called cradle-to-grave tracking. Now, one of the things about RCRA, and this is true in a lot of countries, they've got domestic hazardous waste manifests like the RCRA Hazardous Waste Manifest, but in terms of international shipments, it's incomplete. If you've got an export, the RCRA manifest only applies in the US, and so you've got what's called cradle-to-border tracking. And for imports, you have what's called border-to-grave tracking. You don't have cradle-to-grave tracking for international shipments. And one of the things you have, we've added to RCRA, and this is true around the world, there's a document called the Movement Document, which is essentially an international waste manifest. And so it allows for true cradle-to-grave tracking for international shipments. Something else that's a requirement are confirmations of receipt and confirmations of recovery. And that's if a scrapper waste that's regulated goes to a facility, receiving facility, that facility needs to confirm that it received it. And then they might store it for a couple of months before they recycle or recover it. And then once they do that, then they have to send a confirmation of recovery. And these here, notice, consent, transit countries, the movement document, and these two confirmations are pretty universal at this point. Almost all countries apply these in some form in a fairly consistent form, actually, for regulated waste transboundary movements. Just as a reminder, the majority of plastic scrap is not going to be hazardous waste under RCRA. It's a pretty small sliver, I think. And so, most plastic scrap from the U.S. perspective most plastic scrap is not subject to RCRA import-export requirements. Could be subject to requirements from other countries, that we're trading with, but not subject to RCRA requirements. So something to keep in mind is that more and more countries are placing prior notice and consent requirements on plastic scrap and waste, and more and more countries are broadening the scope of what they consider to be hazardous plastic. In the US, we're looking at a sliver of plastic that would be potentially hazardous. But some countries are looking, you see this particularly with brominated flame retardants, plastics with chlorinated flame retardants, plastics with heavy metals, looking at those as hazardous plastics. But they're even going beyond that, some of the countries, and they're looking at, okay, what other additives are in plastics? And deciding, are those hazardous? So I think this is a trend you're going to see, is you're going to see more and more countries cover a broader and broader range of plastics as hazardous. So I think that's something that's coming down the road. Something to keep in mind, and I've alluded to this, is that anytime there's an export, there's two countries involved. We might not regulate it in the US, but the other country might regulate it. And so you've got to comply with the regulations of both countries. It's not just the United States. So anytime you've got, an export, for example, you've got to find out what the country, the exporter would need to find out what are the requirements in the importing country, what are they applying to make sure that they're in compliance with that. And the same with transit countries. Next slide, please. So I think many of you are aware, and probably all of you are aware, of the China National Sword restrictions of like 2017, 2018, where China severely restricted the scrap, including plastic scrap, that they were importing. So you just saw this tremendous decrease in the amount of plastic scrap that was imported, and had a dramatic effect on the scrap exports of the United States, a number of Western European countries, Japan, et cetera. So basically, in some form, one of our main messages here is that this is happening in a sense again. This is, you know, because the marine litter issue is so important to so many countries, driving how folks look at plastics. And so what you're seeing is that the changes in the Basel Convention from last May 2019, where you're taking, you know, non-hazardous plastic scrap, which was not regulated, you know, under an international agreement, now is, you know, it's a lot of that has become what's called Basel covered waste. Prior notice and consent is going to be required for a lot of non-hazardous plastic scrap. And because it's Basel covered waste and the U.S. is not a party to the Basel Convention, and that party non-party prohibition comes into effect, that if you've got Basel party countries that aren't members of the OECD, which is a lot of countries, that we're under Basel, we're not gonna be able to export them. It's still legal under RCRA, but it's gonna be illegal under Basel. And it's gonna be illegal in that importing country. And you know, as you can see in the chart there on the right, you know, so the OECD countries are Canada, Mexico, South Korea, and Turkey. Now, I mean, we've been talking with Canada, we haven't worked things out. It looks like non-hazardous plastic scrap is gonna move freely between us and Canada with little or no change. You know, Mexico, South Korea, Turkey, we don't quite know yet, but we still could trade with them. They're OECD countries that fall under Basel Article 11 agreement, the OECD Council decision. Now these other countries, India, Hong Kong, Malaysia, Taiwan, Thailand, and Indonesia, Vietnam is another one, they're not OECD countries. They're Basel parties that are not OECD countries. So the Basel party non-party prohibition applies. So after January 1st, under the Basel Convention, those countries shouldn't be taking plastic scrap exports that are covered, Basel covered, Y48, Basel code Y48 that Leah talked about, which is a lot of non-hazardous plastic scrap. They shouldn't be taking those, they shouldn't be importing that from the United States. And Malaysia and to some extent Indonesia have already started pushing back on us and already started rejecting U.S. plastic scrap shipments, even though the Basel January 1st requirements haven't even kicked in yet. So we're expecting after January 1st to start seeing some significant pushback from some of these Basel countries that are not OECD countries. And they're going to start rejecting U.S. plastic scrap exports. So that's going to be a big issue. It's going to be a dramatic change. You know, after China restricted its imports, you started seeing a lot more imports going to some of these other countries listed in this pie chart here, as well as Vietnam. And those countries are probably going to start pushing back. So what we saw with the China National Sword in 2017, you know, we're gonna see something, I think, similarly dramatic in 2021 when it comes to plastic scrap. You know, it sort of as a reminder, China, you know, did it for virtually all scrap. I mean, what we're talking about here is plastic scrap, not the wide range of plastic scrap in China National Sword, but for plastic scrap, I think it's gonna be, you know, almost as dramatic a change. So as you can see, we've got quite a few exports. You know, last year we had, 667 metric tons, worth $279 million. And then we imported almost 400,000 metric tons of plastic scrap valued at $226 million. So it's not inconsequential. But I asked you to look at the import chart. So, you know, you can see we've got a lot on both the import chart and the export chart with Canada. But Mexico, which is another trading partner, we've got about four times as many imports from Mexico as we export to Mexico. So for Mexico, it's a little different. It's not, the imports and exports aren't even, we're importing a lot more from them than we're exporting. So again, we don't really know how Mexico is going to want to control those plastic scrap imports and exports. They've made some noises about, you know, they're going to want some prior notice and consent for non-hazardous plastic scrap, but we're not really entirely sure yet. So, all right. Well, thank you, Leah. That's it for me.